emailing with Paul and Mildred to talk to you guys today, I was just thrilled. Because I met I don't even know how long ago it was, but Alice, who just introduced me, had seen online a podcast that I had done as an interview with Michael Litchens at Catholic Exchange. And in it, I talk about Marcel Van, the servant of God, who is the little spiritual brother of St. Therese and probably my favorite saint, along with St. Therese. And so having heard that interview in which I also talked about Padre Pio and what he had in common with St. Therese and Marcel and why I loved him, Alice told Paul and Mildred, and for those who are joining us because they're in Nashville, and for all of you who are hosting us from the Padre Pio prayer group, you know that if you know Paul and Mildred, then very big things start to happen in your life. So it's been really fun to know them. And Paul would send me the news about your monthly meetings in Nashville. And I would say to myself, gosh, if only I could live in Nashville for a while so I could go to these meetings. And now, one more miracle and blessing is getting to be here with you guys in the prayers and in the speaking. I mean, I've listened to your speakers on the website, and it's crazy that I could be one of them. So I'm really thrilled to be here. I want to thank Alice, and I want to thank Paul and Mildred, and I want to thank Marcel Van and Padre Pio, and also, of course, my friend and my sister and the one I would call my guiding star, St. Therese the Little Flower. One of the things that Paul and Mildred and Alice and I hit it off about right away is how we love miracles and the saints, and miracles big and small. So I wanted to tell a funny story real quick about a miracle. This is the kind of miracle that Paul would tell. I mean, he tells miracles about people being healed and just awesome, awesome, big miracles. But because I love the little flower, I love everything little as well. She's taught me to appreciate the little things. And so here was a little miracle that's pretty funny. And I'll tell you a little more about Marcel Van, but he is very little and he is very silly. And so I think he was part of this miracle the other day. Paul asked, I should say my family, we live in California, my husband and my younger son and myself, but we're in Florida right now, which was another miracle of the pandemic, because my husband teaches school and he teaches at Thomas Aquinas College, and they're very serious about what they do. Sometimes I think they're a little too serious, so I try to inject humor when possible, but they were trying to keep going, like a lot of people were with a lot of things when the virus started. And then they realized they couldn't, but I had flown out to see if I could be of help to my husband's family in Florida. We're very close to my father-in-law and my mother-in-law and my sister-in-law, Nikki, who was very generously putting her life on hold, but and yet enjoying her life by being with them, of course. We all wanted to be with them, but my husband and I couldn't. My father-in-law has cancer. That's why it was a little more urgent than usual to be with them. And my husband's school suddenly closed, so we came to Florida just like that. I came first so that if there was a shutdown in the domestic travel, I would be where my heart had wanted to be for so many months. And then, praise God, the school had to close and online teaching started. And so my husband flew out with our son Dominic, and here we all are. And then happily for us, our other sister-in-law, Chris, came down from Virginia with her kids and can keep an eye on the kids in another house while we do our best to keep Paul and my mother-in-law, Lucretia, entertained and actually just enjoy them as if it was the best summer vacation ever, even though it's not really summer yet. So here we are, and Paul said in an email, hey, why don't I send you something? And in fact, knowing me, I probably said, hey, Paul, send me something. So he wrote me an email and said, give me your address. We're sending you some things. Many of you might know about the beautiful relics that he has, second and third class relics, and he wanted to send me some. And so the miracle was simply this. We've been very careful whenever any packages come, because my father he's immunocompromised, my father-in-law, and so we have to be really careful about everything and not bringing the virus in the house. So I got some packages. I got packages from a neighbor and dear, dear friend who had sent me some things I needed from home. And I dumped them. I mean, I was so careful. I'm not going to go through the whole process, but basically I dumped them into a bag and I put the boxes away and I washed my hands 3,000 times and I rinsed off all the stuff, except I was, you know, mostly just being careful that I'm not going to contaminate it all. And then later I had a chance to look at it. It wasn't until like 5 hours. It was way later. And I looked in the bag and I wondered, oh, this is the coolest thing ever. There are all these relics in here. And there's a bracelet that's Padre Pio, and there's another bracelet with a miraculous medal. And I thought, these are the things Paul was going to send, but somehow they came from California. This was another one of those miracles that Paul talks about. It was like by location of these gifts, because they ended up in these other boxes. And then I realized that in my haste, I had cut open the envelope from Paul and poured it into the same box or bag and brought it all in together. So it was only the miracle of my enjoying my own stupidity. But thank you, all of you guys, and Paul and Mildred especially, for remembering us in your prayers out here as we're all remembering each other, and for being so generous always. So now, I want to talk about my two new books, but especially I want to talk about Padre Pio, because we're all here. Well, a lot of us are here because we love Padre Pio, and I invited a bunch of people to be here because they love me. So we all, in the end, have this connection. And I want to ask our guardian angels and Padre Pio's guardian angel and the archangels to pray for us and be with us. And I also want to ask Carlo Acutis to be with us, who was a kind of, he was a kid who loved the internet. My son and his cousins have been having a lot of fun with the internet lately, and I'm just really excited about the fun ways that they're using it. So I love when we can redeem the internet and when technology comes to our aid, and to be here with you is definitely part of that. As we are having this get together, I have a great nephew, Jude, who's being baptized. So I want to encourage you that sacraments are happening and the mystical body is growing. And I have people united in this visit on Zoom. My sister from Germany was on a while ago. I think she's still in the background. My son in Colorado, friends in California. My nephew is being baptized, and a great nephew in Kansas. And I think my in-laws out in the living room are watching this. I'm in the back bedroom. This is where Tony teaches now. So what I have to share with you is joy. I have been blessed, and I often wonder if it's a curse to those I love, but I have been blessed with an abundance of joy, and so it only seems right to share it, even if now it has to be from 6 feet apart and behind a mask, which you can imagine is very challenging for me because I love to hug people and I love to smile. So pray for me that I honor the sacrifices and the little inconvenience, which are very small, and yet it's a great built-in Lent. And I always am one to look on the bright side. So I stopped giving up sweets because I was giving up, you know, faces and hugs. And that's been good. It's always good to, you know, have an eclair in the middle of Lent for no good reason. But the way that I found my sharing of joy, the way I found to share my joy most successfully or easiest, is often through books. I have a precious skill that I can type fast, so I like to write. And thanks to God's perfect timing, I recently had 2 new books published. And I have a new publishing label called Little Way Books that I used to publish them with. And this means, because I was the publisher of these 2 new books, and also because my previous publisher is a wonderful, generous Catholic woman and agreed with helping me regarding a book she had previously published for me, I was able to put up on Amazon and on my website, which is just my name, SusieAndres.com. My middle name is Antoinette, so it's not totally unheard of that I'm Anthony Andres. That's also my husband's name. But I go usually by SusieAndres.com. Also, if you put my name into Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, on your Kindle, on your Nook, you will see that we now have 3 books available for free. The first one, I don't know if you can see this gorgeous cover by Carl Larsson, the Swedish, I think he was, painter. It's a novel called The Paradise Project, and I mention it because it makes people laugh. And if you want a reason to laugh and get away and escape, and you happen to be stuck in your house for some strange reason and you can't figure it out, but you've stopped going to your usual places, don't worry your little head about why you're in your house. Just go on the internet, which I know you can because you're on it now, and download The Paradise Project for free, and you will forget your troubles. The second book is a book called Stations of the Cross with St. Therese, kind of a timely book. And you can download and even print that one out since it's so short. And if you know of a priest or a parish who would like copies, definitely contact me through my blog. A friend asked me this morning if I could send copies to her parish in British Columbia. She had mentioned before that she had hoped that might be possible, and she talked to her pastor. And of course, their church is not open, but they're able to, I should say maybe the church is open without having mass. A lot of churches are having adoration, and I would be glad to donate some books if I can to your parish and have them there in the print form. But also, you can just get them for free or even put them on your phone and read them. It's got the traditional format and beautiful images from the Stations of the Cross. But what I really want to talk about today is the third book. It is a book I've been working on for 4 years, and it's called Something New with St. Therese. And my talk today, first I had called it Padre Pio, St. Therese, and the Pandemic of Love. But then I decided that I ought to call it, I've forgotten what I ought to call it. There was another name, but I got distracted. I just looked at the clock and it's 3:03. And so I thought maybe we could say that little Divine Mercy prayer that we say at 3 o'clock, and then we'll keep going with the talk. So, name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, amen. O blood and water, which gushed forth from the heart of Jesus as a font of mercy for us, I trust in you. Name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. And now I remember the other name of my talk. So because the name of my new book is Something New with St. Therese, I thought that the talk really is Something New with St. Therese and Padre Pio, because he comes into the story and into the book. Before I get into how they're connected, St. Therese and Padre Pio, I want to mention another book. So if you hold on, I'll show you a picture. This is my relic of St. Therese. She came from California because we knew I would need her. She's always needed. But this is a book called St. Conrad and the Wildfire. If you were to go onto Amazon and put in St. Conrad, then this book would come up because, happily, it's the only book about St. Conrad or with St. Conrad in the title. So it's called St. Conrad and the Wildfire, and it's a children's book that my friend Maura wrote. And she is an experienced children's author. She, I think she usually gets published by the group that Scott Hahn and Mike Aquilina head up, the St. Paul's Center in Steubenville, Ohio. But Maura has done a lot of really beautiful children's books that relate the Old Testament to the New Testament. Like, she has one about the story of Jonah and how it prefigures Christ. And on each facing page, there'll be a picture from Jonah and a picture from the New Testament. And it shows it's how they're related. I think it's called typology. That's the theological name for what she does. And this book, however, is just simply about St. Conrad and his wife and the trouble he gets into and how he gets out of it. But the illustrations are gorgeous. And since we are all desperate right now to find new ways to amuse ourselves, you could send this as a surprise to a child. You could send it to yourself. And I guarantee you'll love it. That I'm going to give a money back guarantee on all the books. So the one that I have to refund if you don't like it would be Maura's book. But since I know you're going to like it, we don't have a problem. And since mine are free, I'll give you back the zero money you spent if you don't like those as well. Okay, so what I want to say about Padre Pio and St. Therese is that my book, Something New with St. Therese, I started writing 4 years ago. And in the process, I learned more about Padre Pio. But if we start with Padre Pio, I'll say personally, I have two sons. The older one was born when my husband and I were, you know, married a couple of years, and then we didn't have any more children. God didn't send us any more. My mom and my Aunt Joan went to Lisieux and asked what they should pray for. And I said, I would like you to pray for my friend to have a baby. And they said, well, we will, but we're going to pray for you to have a baby. So a year later, I found out that I was expecting my second child. That was 12 years after my first. And when we went to find out his due date, it was October 1st, the Feast of St. Therese. So then when I got close to having him, I was going to have a C-section. And so the doctor asked, why don't you pick the day since we have to schedule this C-section? And you could pick any day like a week before or after your due date. That was in 2002, which was the year that Padre Pio was canonized. And his feast is exactly a week before St. Therese. I think maybe a week and a day. It's a perfect novena. If you start on Padre Pio, you end on St. Therese. And I said, I love St. Therese so much, and I'm such a selfish person that I refuse to share her feast day for the rest of my life with a boy's birthday party. So I'm going to have my C-section on Padre Pio's feast day, and then that way my son will have not only St. Therese, but also Padre Pio as his patron. And then to top it off, he was baptized on St. Faustina's Day on October 5th. So we just tried to pile all the saints we could into that boy. And it's been working. He's a lot of fun. Well, I read a lot about Padre Pio at that time because of the connection with my son. And I was delighted to find that even though many people think that he's scary because he yelled at people, the more I read about him, the more I realized it was probably good he yelled at people sometimes, but mostly he didn't. And you guys probably know this, but I just delight in how he explained there were, I think, if I can remember them, three reasons why Padre Pio yelled at people. One would be the times he would have yelled at me if we knew each other, because he would yell when the ladies would snip off pieces of his habit. They would bring scissors and they would start cutting off his cord or his habit, and he would have been naked, poor guy, if like he hadn't yelled at these crazy Italian women, which I would have been right there, front and center, elbowing people out with my scissors. So it doesn't hurt my feelings. I kind of crack up to know that he knows me. The other reason he would yell would be because people would lie to him. And I don't mean like the kind of lie we all fall into and shouldn't, like, Padre Pio, you look great today, if he was looking under the weather. I mean more like someone, I read a story recently, went into the confessional on purpose. He bragged to his friends and said, I'm going to go into the confessional and just make up something and tell Padre Pio I'm cheating on my wife, even though I'm not married or whatever it was. And I'll prove he's a fake. And the guy gets in there, and no sooner has he opened his mouth than Padre Pio starts yelling at him to get out. You can imagine. Like, the guy doesn't say anything, and Padre Pio, I mean, whatever the exact circumstances of the story, the general idea is he's, you don't even have a wife. And the guy's like, I didn't even say yet I had a wife. Oh, no, he's on to me. He's real. The guy will go out of the confessional. This would happen various times. You can imagine the little person in line next is thinking, oh, no, I don't want to go in. He's going to yell at me. And then I read this in more than one account. The person behind that person would say, hey, hurry up. We're all waiting in line. There's so many of us that want to go. Get in there. The person would get in there, and Padre Pio, far from yelling, would know the person's fear and gently say, you know, my son, don't be afraid. Let's talk about your sins. I know you shouldn't have overeaten the other night. You know, and he'd do that reading souls thing and help the guy through it. So the third reason that Padre Pio would yell at people was because, I don't think this was yelling, I think this was more being gruff. Sometimes he would look very gruff as he walked through the crowds of people on his way to his confessional or to mass. And I believe that the reason was, he said, or his friends also said, he said this, he was so tender-hearted. He loved all of these people so much, and he knew, because he was given this gift, sometimes you could see it, he would know their sufferings, because there's a paralyzed man or a blind man or a woman with a baby that's obviously ill, he would see the suffering. Other times it was because God gave him that grace, and he knew what kind of interior sufferings or private sufferings that the people had. And, you know, there's a great saying, I think originally I finally found it attributed to St. Ephrem. It says, be kind to everyone you meet because everyone is fighting a great battle. Well, Padre Pio was the essence of kindness. He was just like Christ. But he was also so human and limited that he knew that if he wasn't gruff as he walked by all these people, he would burst into tears, melt down, and not be able to even get to where he was going. So having discovered these many years ago, about 17 years ago, how sweet and good and loving Padre Pio was, I've tried to stick close to him since then. And I was really happy today in getting to talk about him along with St. Therese to realize that even for all of you who know about Padre Pio and love him so much, I think I have three new things I could tell you. So this is something new with St. Therese and Padre Pio. The book is called Something New, particularly because of some particular very new thing that I'll tell you about in a minute. And Padre Pio shares that with St. Therese, but he shares two other things that I think are interesting. One is, I recently read an account of his life, and it was just like a newspaper article from some years ago, and it was mentioning his different charisms and the times that he bilocated. So bilocating means that our bodies can only be in one place, but somehow God gives the saints occasionally this special gift of having their bodies be somewhere else, or rather an appearance of their bodies. I'm not even clear how that works. I believe his body, I mean, Padre Pio, when he was alive, he was always, after he became a friar, always in the monastery in San Giovanni Rotondo. But then there would be reports of him from all over the world, you know, sometimes by people who knew and loved him. And you might think, well, maybe they're just imagining that. But often by people who did not know him but needed help. And then when they later saw a picture of him, they would recognize. Saint Therese did the same thing. So they had that in common. After she died, she would often appear to people. They had no idea who she was. Then later they'd see a picture and say, oh, that's the nurse who helped me. There were just hundreds at least of stories from World War I where St. Therese would appear on the battlefield and help people and save their lives and the front lines. And they often thought that there was this woman, I don't know why she was on the battlefield, but she dragged me away from where the landmine blew up or whatever it was. And, the beautiful thing about this that was not bilocating, that was showing up from heaven in some angelic way. But Padre Pio bilocating in his life, this account mentioned that it was usually because people needed him. So he would go somewhere and maybe hear a confession, even though he wasn't there. I don't know how that worked. Well, apparently at least once he did it for his own pleasure, because witnesses saw him at the canonization of St. Therese in 1925. So Padre Pio bilocated to St. Therese's canonization. It was done in Rome. He was in San Giovanni Rotondo, which wasn't that far. You might think maybe he just like snuck out of the monastery, and I don't think so. He never left. So that was a cool thing. The other cool thing I discovered this morning was that what I'm going to talk about in Something New with St. Therese, and while our time is limited here, I'll tell you as much as I can. You can get the book, and believe me, I'm such a goof, I'd be happy to advertise myself, but that's not actually the point in this case. When I mention my books, it's because they will change your life, and it's not because I will, it's because St. Therese and Jesus will. So there's going to be a lot for you to learn about this Something New, but it's related to St. Therese's act of oblation to merciful love. She made her act of oblation, that is, she made an offering of herself to God as a victim soul, but wait, not as a victim to his justice, not to invite pain and suffering that would be visited on others. She decided, as beautiful as that kind of offering was in the tradition of the church, it did not attract her in the least. She did not like suffering. She did not like pain. And she did not like to focus on God's justice, except to say his justice was almost more adorable than his mercy, because he knows how pathetic we are. And so in justice, he has to give us a huge break. Well, he, God, inspired her to make an offering to his love. She said, his love is even greater than his justice, if you could make a distinction like that. But let's just say his love is there too, and it's not being accepted. It's often rejected, even by us when we make little sins. So she said, what if I were to offer myself to love? And then just like he doesn't have an outlet for his love to the people who won't receive it, I could become the person that he pours it on. So here, God, come to me, and all the love that the other people don't want, just give it to me. I'll take it. That's her act of oblation to merciful love. And after she made it, she invited everyone to pray it with her. She first invited her sisters in the convent, and then she wrote in one of her What Became Story of a Soul, a prayer that all little souls would make this act with her. Okay, she made that act on June 9th, 1895, 2 years before she died. It was Trinity Sunday that year. That happens to be 125 years ago, this June 9th. So this is a big year for the act of oblation, and I'm really excited that my book is coming out or has come out. I didn't even realize when I was doing it because I started it 4 years ago, and you don't usually say, oh, this is so exciting, I'm going to publish it on the 121st anniversary. But this one snuck up on me, and it's a good timing thing. Now, I love dates. I love anniversaries. And I've read that St. John Paul II did too, so I feel like I'm in good company. I wondered if anything happened that connected St. Therese and St. Padre Pio to each other. And it turns out that on June 9th, something very important happened to him. Now, it wasn't 1895. It was June 9th, 1931. And I'm going to read to you what I read this morning. This is from a really wonderful book called Padre Pio and I. That is Padre Pio and the letter I, like this man who's writing the book. He's an Italian man who's still alive, and he was a very good friend of Padre Pio's. He and his wife got married. That was the last marriage that Padre Pio performed. And he met a guy on a train recently, the man who wrote this book, and his book was in Italian, and this man said, let me help you find a translator and put it into English. So this book, Padre Pio and I, is in English. And there's a chronology of Padre Pio's life in it, and it says June 9th, 1931. The Holy See prohibits Padre Pio from all activities, including hearing confessions and having contact with his spiritual children, except for Mass, which he can only celebrate in private. I thought that was really interesting because it kind of reminded me of what we're going through right now. It was not until the Feast of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, July 16th. I'm sorry to say it was not 1931. It wasn't a few months later. It was 2 years later in 1933 that Pope Pius XI reversed that ban, saying, I have not been badly disposed toward Padre Pio, but I have been badly informed. Pius XI, incidentally, is one of my heroes because St. Therese was so dear to him. She was the first saint that he beatified, the first that he canonized. And on her canonization day, the day after, I think, he told the Bishop of Philadelphia who had come, the Cardinal, it was the happiest day of his life. She was his guiding star. He always consulted her whenever he needed anything or had a problem. So just to say, I know as Padre Pio fans, we're tempted to think Pius XI obviously really blew it. What a jerk. But let's try not to call our holy fathers jerks. Never very polite. And in fact, they often were just badly informed. So here we are, June 9th, 1931. The Holy See prohibits Padre Pio from all activities, including hearing confessions and having contact with his spiritual children. And it really makes me cry because I'm sure if we added up a list of all the priests that the people on this call, on this Zoom talk know, who we personally know have given their lives to Christ in all sincerity and been just models of virtue for us, that is going to be a long list. I think it's probably going to go into the thousands. And almost all of those priests, at least the ones we know in the United States and Italy and Canada and probably many of France, I'm guessing most countries in Western Europe, at least, they can't say public masses. They can't, a lot of them, hear confessions. And they're probably dying inside, and Holy Week is coming, and who would believe that this could happen in Holy Week? I was just on an email list with a bunch of ladies from California where I live, and it was interesting because one of the ladies, her husband is an Eastern Rite Catholic priest, and he's also a hospital chaplain. So one of our friends was asking, we're all desperate for the sacraments. Does anyone know of a priest who's willing to kind of slip under the wire, or maybe just some way that we could get the sacrament of confession? I've got all these wonderful teenage children or young people in my house, and they're not bad kids, but they really actually are desiring this sacrament. Or what about the dying? Or what, you know? And it was so cool because the lady whose husband is the Eastern Rite priest knew from the inside the pain of priests. She said he also works in a hospital, so he's very aware of the easy spread that's happening of this virus and the need to protect people. And I don't think she was saying that any of us had or she had the answer about what bishops should decide in these circumstances. But what she said that I loved was to please offer up the suffering for the pain of priests. And she said, let's be obedient. And then she had this great advice. You know, religious orders are not in the same exact way under obedience to the bishop. They're under obedience to their superiors. So you might find a religious order that's near you and see if they might be willing or able to hear your confession. I know some of the priests are being very creative and finding ways to have what they call like a drive-through confession. But then our bishop, who's very wonderful, Bishop Gomez in Los Angeles, and Bishop Barron, you all know, is in Santa Barbara. Bishop Barron said, well, I kind of agree with our bishop's decision not to have a drive-through confession because, let's face it, that just makes it sound like McDonald's. You know, are people ready to make that distinction? This is not just something that you get like a burger. Now, there are reasons you would take advantage of every possible way, but my point is simply this, that I think Padre Pio has an important message for us today, that even if we're deprived of the sacraments, let's accept in love our part of it. We're not priests. We can be obedient. We can seek for creative ways. And that's what I'm here to tell you about with my Something New. What Padre Pio and Saint Therese have in common that I write about in my book, Something New, is the full title of the book is Something New with Saint Therese, Her Eucharistic Miracle. We just prayed the prayer that Padre Pio would say after communion, where he asked Jesus, stay with me, Lord. Most of us know of the doctrine of the divine indwelling of the Trinity. That doctrine says that for someone baptized and in a state of grace, the Blessed Trinity lives in them, actually, really. But you would draw the line and you would not say that Christ in his physical humanity dwells in the person, except when they receive him, when the person receives him in Holy Communion. Because Holy Communion is his body as well as his blood and his soul and divinity. Well, his divinity and I guess even his soul, I'm not sure about that, his human soul, no, but his divinity would dwell within us all the time in the state of grace. But the Blessed Sacrament, his real presence in his physical humanity, would only dwell with us for 15 minutes more or less after communion until the Blessed Sacrament is digested. Theologians are awesome about this. We have the whole history of the church, St. Thomas Aquinas, all the way back to the fathers of the church. Going into the meaning of this, it's not as if Christ becomes us, we digest him. No, we digest the accidents of the bread and wine that remain, but we are actually becoming divinized in some way. Nonetheless, everyone agrees that when the accidents are gone, the real presence of Christ is gone as well. So those Eucharistic miracles, I mentioned Carlo Acutis. He used the internet, and we should probably all look this up later. I don't know if I ever have. He used the internet to spread the truth about Eucharistic miracles. He lived in Europe. He lived in Italy, and he liked to travel with his family. And they would go, at his request, they visited a lot of the places of the Eucharistic miracles, and then he posted them on a website and ended up having this huge website. as well as a display that could go to parishes and still does all over the world about these miracles of the Eucharist. Usually, the Eucharistic miracle is when, in some form or another, Christ has kind of overcome the laws of nature in order to make even the accidents of bread and wine be different than they normally would. So we've already got a miracle in the Eucharist itself. It's the Blessed Sacrament. It's the most special one in a certain way because Christ is right there. But then you have the fact that it makes no sense. It is a mystery. I mean, it does make sense. I'm sure Chesterton could explain this perfectly, right? It's a paradox. It makes more sense than everything else, but we can't get to the bottom of it. That is already a miracle, that Christ himself would subsist and the appearances of bread and wine would subsist with him, and we see and receive him under those appearances, even though it's actually substantially him. The further miracle in a Eucharistic miracle is when, for instance, a priest, maybe in history, maybe in the 13th century, a priest doubted the real presence of Christ, like any, in a certain way, we can appreciate that, like any normal person would. Not that we're going to, because we have the gift of faith, but it's so strange. If someone like that priest denies the presence of Christ, sometimes Christ has performed a miracle, and for instance, in the Eucharistic miracle of Lanciano, in front of the priest's hands, the bread and wine turned into flesh. Now we can say, when did that happen? I don't believe it. I haven't seen it. That was where Carlo, who was just like any one of our kids, he died, let's see, 10 years ago. He'd be like 25 right now. He said, I want to go see that miracle. And that miracle still exists, and you can actually go, and scientists have tested it and found out that the flesh is not just any old flesh. It's a human heart of a male about 33 years old, something along those lines. So what kind of Eucharistic miracle did St. Therese have? I've read a lot about St. Therese. I've read a lot about Padre Pio. I had never heard of either of them having a particular Eucharistic miracle. I suppose Padre Pio, you could say that while he wasn't technically a saint who lived for years only on the Eucharist, he did have the experience that being so ill so often, he couldn't consume much food, but he would always say Mass. And I'm seeing a beautiful relic show up. That is really exciting. He would, when they forced him to eat, he would lose weight. When they let him just do what he could, it makes me think of my father-in-law. You know, when someone doesn't want to eat, you tempt them with food. With Padre Pio, they forced food on him, and they were doing all these scientific studies because everyone was always interested in the Vatican, you know, his superiors. He would lose weight. When he didn't eat anything except the Eucharist, he actually gained weight and was kind of a largish man. So that was a sort of Eucharistic miracle. But the one that I discovered in St. Therese was this. Something new with St. Therese, her Eucharistic miracle, is about a particular petition she makes in her act of oblation to Merciful Love. She tells God that he promised that he would give us whatever we asked for, so she knows that all her desires will be fulfilled because he said, I'll give you whatever you ask for. And she also knows from a principle she takes from a doctor of the church before her, St. John of the Cross, her father in Mount Carmel, in the Carmelite order, he said, God gives us desires because he wants to fulfill them. Now, I am going to talk to you for another little while, and then we'll stop, and it might seem like, wait, there's a lot of unanswered questions here. What do you mean he gives me everything I desire? I wanted a Corvette. I don't have a Corvette. Yes, I actually answered that very objection for free. You can read about it. There's definitely distinctions to be made, and we would make those distinctions even in our own desires. I have had a longstanding desire, I would say about 10 months long, that I could be living in Florida, and it has not abated, and I tried bilocating the latter half of last year, and it turns out you only can do it if God gives you the gift, and he didn't give me the gift, but I did my best. I wanted to be in California and Florida, but really I wanted to be in Florida. So I apologize for the pandemic, but it seems to me that God made it work so that I could be in Florida. He does fulfill our deepest desires. Okay. Therese, she had a really big desire that no one would think was silly, and that was to receive communion even on a daily basis. She doesn't actually say it like that. She says, I cannot receive Holy Communion as often as I desire. And as I explain in the book, I think that she would desire to receive even more than once a day. But the point is, look, there's the Eucharistic miracle of L'Anciano at the bottom of my screen. You might be able to see it. In the time of St. Therese, we're used to, if you know a little bit of history, and if you don't worry about it. I don't know much, but I know this. St. Pius X was the one who granted more universal access to Holy Communion. He was the one who said, a child at the age of 7, if he understands this is Christ, he can receive this Eucharist. Before that, in the lives of the saints, it's often like they're 10 or 12 or 13 or 14 years old, but Pius X was the one that made it 7. He also said everyone should be able to receive communion every day without asking for special permissions from the church or spiritual directors. Interestingly, this was shortly after St. Therese died that he made these decisions. Pius X was the pope after Leo XIII, who was a very long reigning pope, one of the longest, and beautiful, beautiful pope, fantastic pope. He was the one that St. Therese asked for permission to enter the Carmel. She was disappointed when he said, be obedient to your superiors, they'll know what to do. But then they did let her in, so that was okay. Leo XIII had already given permission to religious orders that everyone should be able to receive communion every day. But it turned out that in the Carmelite monastery where St. Therese was, the Mother Superior was afraid of that ruling. And she thought, she was scrupulous, and so she thought that no one would be able to really appreciate Christ, and so she didn't let them receive every day. There are a lot of beautiful stories about St. Therese and the Eucharist and her desire to receive every day, though she couldn't. Well, she was a very creative thinker. She did not give up. She had a big imagination. She knew God was awesome and all-powerful. So here's how she speaks in that part of the prayer of the act of oblation. She says, I cannot receive Holy Communion as often as I desire. Now remember, she's already said that God's going to give her desires and he makes her desire what he wants to give her. I cannot receive Holy Communion as often as I desire, but Lord, are you not all powerful? Remain in me as in a tabernacle and never let yourself be separated from your little victim. I'm going to start crying because I'm so happy to be here. It's been 4 years. I've been waiting to say that. You are my huge public. Take this message. Share it to the ends of the earth. So 4 years ago, on the day that Therese's sister Celine died, it was the anniversary of her death, that is, February 25th. It was 2016 in my world. Father Michael Gately came to where I live, to Thomas Aquinas College, and gave a talk about his then new book, 33 Days to Merciful Love, about offering yourself to love like St. Therese did. It's supposed to take 33 days to read one of Father Gately's books, but when you like St. Therese, I mean, imagine you bring home a new book of Padre Pio and someone says, read it for 33 days, and you're like, you know what? I don't need to sleep. I'm just going to read this tonight. So I read the whole thing at one blow, and then I thought, okay, that's kind of a waste of a good book. I got to slow down. After I read it all, I said, yes, I've been making this act of oblation for many years now in union with St. Therese. So what if I try to actually mean every word she says? So I started on a little personal campaign that I would take the prayer more slowly. It's a very long prayer, and I'm not really good with long prayers. I usually blank out like right after Dear God for most of it until Amen. And then I'm like, oops, well, St. Thomas Aquinas says if you have the intention to pray, it all still counts. Don't worry. So this time I said, I'm going to really focus and see what I can do about attending to everything she says. And I got to this part, this is really fun. I got to this part where she says, remain in me as in a tabernacle. And I thought, gee, that's funny. I've said this prayer hundreds of times. I mean, I've gone years where I've said part of the prayer every day. I don't really remember thinking long and hard about what she means, but is she actually asking him to remain in me as in a tabernacle? That means the Blessed Sacrament doesn't go away from me. Like, it doesn't just disappear out of the tabernacle. It stays. I knew I needed to do some research and think about this and pray about it. And I knew that although I was excited that I think I had found something new in St. Therese, this is the church we're talking about. There's a 2,000 year history. And if you're too new, it's probably a really bad idea. So I wanted to look at the lives of the saints so I could find that. I'm hearing a delightful child, which I love to hear, but I think someone might be unmuted and they might want to mute. But I don't mind the child. I actually like that a lot. Okay, so who would you expect in the saints would have this miracle? I would think of Padre Pio. I'm like, he had every other awesome charism and gift. So if anyone had this, wouldn't it be Padre Pio? Guess what? Padre Pio had this miracle. I'm going to read you a little bit of my book. After I had discovered it in St. Therese, actually the next person I found this miracle in was St. Faustina. In St. Faustina's diary, she wrote, "I have come to know that Holy Communion remains in me until the next Holy Communion. A vivid and clearly felt presence of God continues in my soul. My heart is a living tabernacle in which the living host is reserved." And then I go on to say, "Having found this first confirmation, the very direct words of our Lord to Faustina, I was eager for others. I hoped to catch a glimmer of the miracle in St. Padre Pio. Knowing his intense intimacy with Jesus, I was sure God had given Pio this gift too. Though leafing through my biographies and books of excerpts from his letters, I found nothing. I have a little book that you may have seen. It's called Padre Pio's Mass by Father Tarcisio of Serravanara. I don't know how I acquired the book. It comes from Our Lady of Grace Friary San Giovanni Rotondo, where Padre Pio lived and where I've never been. I had previously read snippets of the book, and about this time I wanted to reread a lovely passage about Holy Communion. Father Tarcisio writes that Padre Pio was asked, "What is Holy Communion?" And he responded, "It is all an internal and external mercy, an embrace. Ask Jesus to make himself felt sensibly." The interviewer, who is one of his confreres, another Capuchin friar, asks him, "Where does Jesus kiss you?" He says, "All over." "When Jesus comes, does he visit only the soul?" And Padre Pio answers, "The whole being." And then, I love this, the friar asked, "What does Jesus do at communion?" And Padre Pio answered, "He finds delight in his creature." Is communion an incorporation? And then Padre Pio uses the image that St. Therese uses in Story of the Soul when talking about her first communion. He says, "It is a fusion like two candles that melt together and are no longer distinguishable." This much of the interchange I had read before, and I picked the book up again simply to reread it to remind myself of Padre Pio's words, especially his answer to "What does Jesus do at communion? He finds delight in his creature." But now, holding the book, I turned the page and read on. It was 2 weeks after my discovery in St. Faustina, and here is what I found in Padre Pio on the next page, which I had never read. "You have made me understand," says the other priest, "that the sacred species are not consumed in you, that the blood of Jesus flows in your veins. Therefore, you are a living monstrance." And Padre Pio says, "You have said it." It was the only mention I had seen of this miracle in Padre Pio, but it was explicit and direct. It also echoed a beautiful stanza in St. Therese's poem, "My Desires Near Jesus Hidden in His Prison of Love," in which she sings, "Holy Paten, I envy you. Upon you, Jesus comes to rest. Oh, may his infinite grandeur deign to humble itself even to me, fulfilling my hope. Jesus does not wait until the evening of my life. He comes within me. By his presence, I am a living monstrance." I want to say thank you to Father Donald Kinney, who translated St. Therese's poems for the ICS Publishing Company. You can get her poems, and it's thanks to Father Donald's translation. He was the priest that I met around the time that I discovered this, and I thought maybe I was losing my mind, and so he's a good Carmelite priest. He knows St. Therese really well. I said, "Father, am I nuts? And he said, no, you actually understand St. Therese really well. Go deeper. And I said, I think I want to write about this. I think Jesus is asking me to write about this. And he said, write about it. That's great. You've got it. Keep going. So I wrote the book, and I wrote it in about 6 weeks. And I said to Jesus, I want to live this miracle, but I also want to publish this book. But if you have to choose, then let me live this miracle. You see how selfish I am. But I knew that if he had waited as long as he did, I guess like 2,000 years minus 30, I don't know, what are we like, 2,010 years? I know, how does that work? Because we're in, anyway, you do the math. He'd waited a long time to reveal this because I found it in other saints, but it's almost always hidden. The only saint in which it is not hidden that I know of is Saint Anthony Mary Claret. And I have a beautiful niece who is named for him, Antoinette, and I had never really known much about him. He was the bishop of, he was in Spain, made a bishop and an archbishop, and then he was assigned to Cuba. So he went to Cuba for a while. He had a huge apostolate of the press. I loved to read that he would write books and pamphlets, and then he'd kind of airdrop them over places. I don't know how he did that. Not that they had, I don't know if they had airplanes at that point. I was thinking he was taking ships. This was a couple hundred years ago. But he would love to spread good literature, so I asked him to intercede and spread this book around everywhere for free. He had a grace that he spoke of. Now I see a relic that Cynthia is holding. That's pretty awesome. I wonder if she's got St. Anthony Mary Claret or Padre Pio. Someone good is up there. Cynthia, you can unmute. Who do we have there? Can you press unmute in the bottom left corner? Otherwise, it's going to be like 20 questions.
St. Anthony. Anthony Mary Claret.
St. Anthony Mary Claret.
It runs in my husband's family.
Okay. Well, he wants us to know. This is not made up. He's made an appearance. Guest appearance, little cameo up in the screen there. Yes. Well, it was such a big deal in his life. Here's what happened. He wrote a diary. Thanks to Tan Books, we have reprints of about 5 books on, and I think there's another press too, maybe the Claretians, but they've really kept a lot of books about St. Anthony Mary Claret, and there he is in print. And he is often shown in iconography with the Blessed Sacrament on his chest. And the reason, I think if I had ever seen it, I just thought of it like the sunburst on St. Thomas Aquinas, I didn't really realize. The reason that he has this Eucharist on his chest is because one day he was praying and Jesus appeared to him. Actually, I'm going to say it wrong. So I think instead of saying it wrong, I'm going to read it out of my book because I wrote it. Let's see here. This is in a chapter called God's Idea First, to show that it wasn't St. Therese who thought of this. And it wasn't people who thought of this, but it was God who thought of this. So it happened that... It was the 26th of August in 2016, and I have a Friday holy hour that I was kind of tricked into because I was there once, and they asked me if I would be an alternate, and I said, sure. And then the next thing I knew, after not having gone for a couple months, I was the captain. So then I started going in earnest, and I happened to go, and I had this little booklet with me, a really beautiful booklet put out by the Vatican. And let's see. I would tell you the name if I could remember it. I'm going to try to put links to all these different things. It's called Eucharistic Adoration for the Sanctification of Priests and Spiritual Maternity. And I had found out about this booklet by from a friend of mine, Cynthia Montanaro, who is also a writer and is coming out with a book soon about Carmelite saints in the liturgical year and her own life. Well, she had told me about this booklet, I think it was, and I had gotten it. And it was a nice booklet, but it had one thing in the back that I brought with me that day because I wanted to read it again. And it was a beautiful example from St. Anthony Mary Claret about how to pray before the Blessed Sacrament. And it was actually written for a child, so it was very simple and lovely, and I wanted to pray that. And my son Dominic was going to come with me. He was younger then, and I thought maybe he'd like to pray it. Well, I didn't actually give it to him. I don't know if he went with me that day, but I just almost fell out of my pew because what I read was, here I've been searching and searching for examples in the saints and not really finding much. And I read on 26th August, this is a paragraph that came before what I wanted to read. And I never did figure out why that paragraph was there, except that I was supposed to read it. It didn't seem totally related to what I was about to read. But he says from his diary, on 26th August, 1861, finding myself at prayer in the Church of the Holy Rosary at La Granja at 7 o'clock in the evening, the Lord granted me the grace of conserving the sacramental species within my heart. I now bear within me day and night the adorable Eucharist. I must therefore be always recollected and cultivate the interior life. I later found his diary at the library in the college where my husband works, so that I could, and again, that's been reprinted, so it's not that hard to find, so that I could see if I could find this. And I realized the day I was there was August 26th. That's also a special feast. My husband and I are discalced Carmelite seculars, which is a third order Carmelite. And that's a feast of our Holy Mother Teresa when she had the transverberation of her heart, when the angel pierced her heart. There's a beautiful statue in Rome by Bernini. It's in, I think it's in the Church of Santa Vittoria, which is right across from what used to be the American Church in Rome, Santa Susanna. But anyhow, that day, Anthony Mary Claret would have been celebrating St. Teresa's feast too, because although he was not a Carmelite, he was founded his own orders, and I think he was diocesan. But he loved St. Teresa. So he's there at church on August 26th, just like I was, except for him, it was 1861. So 150 years before I was. And he was praying and he had this experience. He wrote about it in his diary. I went and found his diary. I turned the page wondering if he'd say anything more, because I'm like, that's just not enough for me. I always want more. Give me an inch, I'll take a mile if you'll give it to me. So sure enough, I found that date and read it again. And then I turned the page because I was thinking, you know, this is kind of crazy. Can we be sure about this? And then on the next page, St. Anthony writes about 6 months later, on the 16th of May, 1862, at 4:15 while I was in prayer, the same thing occurred of which I made mention before in this chapter, namely the conservation of the Blessed Sacrament in my breast. Yesterday and today also, I was thinking of erasing from this autobiography what I had written concerning this, because he also thought maybe this was crazy. Well, he's St. Anthony Marie Claret, so the Blessed Virgin told me not to do so. Don't try this at home. I mean, asking Jesus to stay, yes, but you don't have to insist that the Blessed Mother reassures you. Read my book. I will reassure you with St. Therese. Afterwards at Mass, Jesus Christ told me that he had granted me this grace of always remaining sacramentally within me. So this is what I talk about in the book, about how these other saints experienced this miracle. More importantly, though, St. Therese asks Jesus to remain in her as in a tabernacle. Although we've heard Padre Pio say he was a living monstrance, I have a kind of theory about that, that most of us are going to be better tabernacles than monstrances. I have been hoping to live this grace for 4 years, and if you asked anyone who knew me if they've seen a big change, they would probably say, yeah, she's gotten worse. So I'm not saying that we're going to be like the great saints, and that's the beauty of St. Therese. We can be like the little saints. And yet, in this littleness, we are able to have a grace greater than that given to the greatest saints. St. Therese wanted everything she did to be imitable. So when they asked her, will you be incorrupt after you die, when she was dying, she said, no way, I'm not going to be incorrupt, because that can't be something people could imitate. They said, oh, maybe you'll die on a really beautiful feast day right after you've received Holy Communion. And she said, no, no, that's not going to happen, because God wants everyone to be able to imitate me. Excuse me for 1 second. I got to plug in my computer before I cut out on you. Maybe that's a hint that it's close to time to go. I've got my husband's new computer here, and if he's in the audience, he could come and help me plug it in. Let's see here. Let's see. I think I'm going to ask. 1 sec. Tiny? Okay, I'm back. My own personal computer advisor is here. Oh, wow. I never could have done that. Thank you. Honey, it doesn't say it's not. Do I just close that? Do you think it is actually plugged in now, or you want to check the other end of it? Just over there, is it plugged in? Maybe it is. It's not. Okay. So thank you, Carlo Acutis, for pointing that out. Plug in both ends of the plug. Thank you, honey. Okay. So we've got these saints, and they're having these great things happen to them, and we're not surprised because they're great saints. What about us? Well, we're going to be that tabernacle instead of that monstrance. We're going to have Jesus hidden in us, and maybe no one will know, and we certainly won't know in a certain way, because it's not like our faith in the Blessed Sacrament in the tabernacle. It's more of a hope. I talk about this in the book. What kind of faith can we have and hope can we have that this could happen to us? But one of the things I love in the book is the part about Marie of the Trinity. She was a novice trained by Saint Therese and one of Therese's best friends, vice versa. They were very close for 3 years before Therese died. And my husband and I had the grace of going on a pilgrimage to Lisieux, which was a lifelong dream of mine, at least maybe till like 30 years long, not necessarily my whole life. But when we went, I had another desire come true. I had always wished, you can see how God answers these prayers. I had always wished that I would be able to go to Lisieux and visit the archives in the Carmelite convent and have the sisters welcome me and be like the writers who went there like 10 or 20 years after Therese died and visit with the sisters and find something no one else had found and bring it to the whole world. So that actually did not happen. No, not in any way. I didn't meet any of the sisters. I didn't go in any private archives, but I did meet a really nice lady who worked there who spoke English, and I was able to ask her, hey, these journal articles that were published in a French magazine about 40 years ago, could we get a hold of them? And I didn't think of asking till the last day. So I came home and she wrote me an email and said, we've located them. We have copies. We'll send them to you. We have to use your credit card. Why don't you send it on the email? I didn't think that was a good idea. So instead I went to visit a friend and at midnight we called France. So it would be 9 a.m. and she spoke French. And so we just had the most fun doing it. Thank you, friend. You know who you are. And I got these journal articles, and in these journal articles, which were in French, I got my other desire of having infused knowledge of French, because with a French dictionary and my guardian angel's help, I was able to puzzle out the passages I needed. What I found was Marie of the Trinity also lived this grace. She had no confirmation from heaven in the same way that the great saints did. Therese, as far as I know, was the only one to ask this, which is just like her. And then she teaches us to ask this because she tells us every little soul is so beloved by Jesus. He thirsts for us so much that there's no reason to think your littleness is an obstacle to him. When Therese made the act, she made it on Trinity Sunday. She immediately grabbed her sister Celine and they went to their sister, Mother Agnes of Jesus, who they were blood sisters as well as in the convent, in the monastery, and Therese asked Mother Agnes, without even saying anything to Celine, she's just holding Celine by the hand and says, can we make an act of oblation of merciful love? And she said it really quickly and she's kind of red in the face and stuttering, but she's trying to be calm. Mother Agnes had no idea what she meant, and so she just said sure, because she trusted her. Therese wrote it out, the act that we have today, and she and Celine knelt 2 days later before the statue of the Virgin of the Smile, which was the one that had helped Therese heal by Mary smiling at her and showing her her loving gaze. After that, she asked her sister Marie of the Sacred Heart, hey, do you want to make this offering? It was like a month or two later. And Maria of the Sacred Heart goes down in history as being one of my favorites who said, no way, I don't want to suffer more. Therese had to explain, no, it's not about suffering, it's about love. And then Marie let herself be talked into it, apparently till the end of her life. And all these sisters lived very long lives to 70, 80, 90 years old. To the end of her life, she wrote to all her correspondents, which was wide. Can you imagine if it was like 1930 and you know that Saint Therese is canonized and her sister is alive in a monastery, so you just start writing a letter and she has to write back? She would always convince people to make this act of offering. Then there's Marie of the Trinity. She was not one of Saint Therese's blood sisters, and she was really fun, really lovely, but she was remarkable for being kind of silly. So she cried a lot before Saint Therese was gonna die, and Therese was like, "You've gotta stop crying, this is not good." And she's like, "But I gotta cry because you're leaving me." So Saint Therese said, "Okay, here's a shell." And it wasn't a big one, it was a little shell. She said, "Cry into the shell. You're allowed to cry into the shell as much as you want. But you can't cry unless you cry into the shell." So Marie and the Trinity would, every time she started to weep, well, she went back actually a few days later, and Therese said, "Okay, are you doing it?" And she said, "No." And Therese said, "No, you have to cry into the shell." So then, of course, she felt completely absurd. And Therese was very nice. So she said, "After I die and I'm really going to heaven, you can cry for like 3 days. And then after that, it's back to the shell." So this is Marie of the Trinity. Therese said, "Do you want to make this act?" And Marie said, "Absolutely." She was a really excited, enthusiastic person. She said, "I would totally make this act." And about 2 hours later, she went to Therese and said, "You know, you were suggesting we make it tomorrow, but I think that's too soon because what the heck am I doing? I got to prepare it. This is really big. I'm not worthy." Saint Therese said to her, "Yes, this act is more important than we can imagine, but do you know what God requires of us by way of preparation? He requires us to admit our unworthiness. Since he has already given you this grace, give yourself up to him without fear." So Maria of the Trinity made it the next day. It was the first Sunday of Advent. It was December 1st that year. She made the offering. Therese prayed with her after Mass and kind of said, "I'm going to offer you up like I'm the priest and you're the victim. And you offer yourself to love, not to justice, but to love." She prayed the prayer that Therese had written for Celine and for all of us. Well, what Maria experienced that day, she wrote later, "That was the most beautiful day of my life." Because at the end of the day, she said to Saint Therese, "You know, all day long, I felt Jesus physically present in me in the Blessed Sacrament." And Saint Therese didn't say, "Well, maybe," and she didn't say, "That's awesome." She just said, "Well, yeah, okay, no big deal. I'm not surprised, because that's the kind of thing God wants to do to show you he's going to answer all these petitions." And then Therese said, "You're probably never going to experience that again, because if you did, you couldn't really live. You're just a little soul. You can't live on this edge of bliss all the time and still be a normal human being," which is actually surprisingly what we're supposed to do. So I found from the journals that I requested in Lisieux, and when I managed to translate them into bad French, but that's okay because I still could get the meaning of them, and I actually... asked my husband, who knows a little bit better French, "What do you think of this?" And he was excited about it too. She wrote Marie of the Trinity to various convents or monasteries rather of people after Therese died. She became one of the little secretaries who would respond to letters written to the Carmel, but not just the letters from anyone, but she became correspondents with different sisters sometimes from other Carmelite convents. And so years later, she wrote to one of these sisters, "I remember that I promised you certain details about the opinion that we have that the Eucharistic Jesus dwelt continually in the soul of our little saint. For me, it is my intimate conviction, because would it be the only desire that Jesus had not realized for her? I cannot believe it. She begged for it each day with such ardor. Then, a fact which is personal to me confirms in me the assurance of her possessing such a favor. I wish to recount it to you in all simplicity." So she goes on then to tell what I just told, that the day I offered myself as a victim of Holocaust to the merciful love of the good God, "I was so inundated with graces that all day I felt in a sensible manner the presence of Jesus' host in my heart. I confided this to Sister Therese of the Child Jesus, who appeared not at all surprised and responded simply, 'The good God, is he not all powerful? It is not difficult for him, according to our desire, to make his sacramental presence, his real presence, subsist in our souls from one communion to the other. By this extraordinary feeling that you experience today, he wants to give you the pledge that all the requests you have made of him in the act of offering will be magnificently granted. You will not always enjoy this feeling, but the effects will be no less real. One receives from God as much as one hopes for." Now, I had actually already read that before I went to Lisieux. In fact, I read that passage probably a million zillion times. I think I'm exaggerating. But anyway, I used to read that all the time. And now I found that she continued to write in this letter to Sister Germaine an update on that experience. She said, writing many years later, "In fact, I have never again felt this sweet grace of the 1st December 1895, but this does not alter the fact that despite the aridities, the life of faith that I lead, I preserve the certitude that the Eucharistic Jesus resides constantly in my heart, and that this marvelous grace is the portion of all little victims of love. If it were not so, what good would it do each day to make this request when one is sure in advance of not having it realized? It would be useless. All that I ask, I think the good God gives me, and this thought expands my soul and does it good." And then she adds a little bit later in another note she wrote to Sister Germain. Oh, no, excuse me. This was not to Sister Germain. This was some years again later. She writes, "For me, this grace of having the Eucharist Jesus remain in us in his real presence, more extraordinary, it is true, than ecstasies, visions, or revelations, can be the lot of little souls without taking them out of their little way of humility, since it is a grace granted to their humble confidence and which operates in bare faith, therefore safe from pride and vainglory." So we get back to what St. Therese said, that she wanted to be imitable. Even though this is a grace greater than most of the other graces Padre Pio had, when he had this grace and when Therese had it, it was so hidden in them that it's something that we are allowed to ask for too. I wouldn't advise asking for bilocation, even though I did it. First of all, you just get nowhere. At least I didn't get anywhere. And secondly, it's not appropriate to our station in life. Many people that I have talked to have objected to the idea of themselves asking for this miracle. And their objection generally goes like this: I can be with Jesus consciously and lovingly for 15 minutes after communion until the Blessed Sacrament, you know, goes away, rather is digested, you know. But they say, I can't do this like all the time. I can't. And the only thing I can say to them is, you're awesome. I can't pay attention for 15 minutes after communion. I can't even do that. But I'm not going to let that stop me, because Jesus is the one thirsting for us. So I will simply conclude by saying, I had asked Jesus to publish this book, and I wondered when he would do it, but I said, I won't worry however long it takes. So I finished it, and Father Donald Kinney, the priest I mentioned, he read it. He said, yep, it's great. Go for it. Publish it. Get a big publisher. Let's get some attention. Well, I don't really know how to get a big publisher, so I didn't try with New York. I didn't try with Random House. I tried with, you know, the Catholic publishers that we all know and love, and I didn't try all of them by any means, but each place I tried, someone would be super excited and say, this is changing my life already. And then they would end up saying, on the higher up level, they'd say, no, we don't think this book is for us, for various reasons. And I would say, that's great. That's Jesus saying, not yet. We ended up starting this little publishing label so that we would just publish it ourselves. I met a priest in Rome, I'm sorry, in Lisieux, and he was so excited about this book. He lives in New Jersey. He's retired. And he said, you need to publish it. And he really encouraged me. And then about maybe 6 weeks ago or 8 weeks ago, February, March, April. Yeah, it was 8 weeks ago. He said, he wrote me a letter and he's like, what's your problem? Publish this book. He's like, I don't know why you're taking so long. Publish this book. So I just got up and published the book, and it was uploaded to be printed and have me look at e-proofs on the 4-year anniversary of the day that Father Gately had come, which was also the anniversary of Celine, the first one besides Therese to make the act going to heaven. And then we also really quickly did our little Stations of the Cross, thinking how timely that will be for Lent. And I'd had that going as something I privately prayed, some of these quotes from St. Therese with the Stations, for 20 years. But I thought, hey, we have a publishing label. We can do whatever we want. So we published these two books, and then there was a pandemic. And I can't, you don't need me to say to you how surreal this time is for all of us. And you don't need me to tell you how ridiculous and sad and horrible it is that none of us can go to Mass. And I can only say that I'm a very feeling person. but I'm not holy enough or sensitive enough, even with all my sensitivity, to really mind what's happening for a personal level, because I have had this grace of coming out to Florida, which was the dear desire of my heart. And I have to laugh because now that I just found out there is actually a Maronite church, and my father's Lebanese, so that's my culture and my history. There's a Maronite church that's having the liturgy, but I can't go because it would be exposing myself and bringing that back to my father-in-law. That makes me sad. But at the same time, I'm like, I wrote the book. Am I really going to complain? I have this secret way of having Jesus with me, and I'm trying to share it with the whole world. I can only suggest that we follow the words that the Blessed Mother gave to my little servant of God, Marcel Vian. I haven't talked about Marcel, and it's time to end. I've already gone, I think, over an hour, and I apologize. As much as I'd love to talk forever, I don't want to take you away from the rest of your life. And I want you to be able to go download these books so you can read them and live these graces. But I think I had a spot I was going to read to you. The Blessed Mother says to Marcel Vian, oh, sorry. Okay. When I was writing the book on St. Therese, I went into the library a lot, beautiful Catholic library, and I found on the shelves, as often happens, this miracle of grace. You know, some book that jumps out at you, you find a book on the floor. What? It just jumped out at me. What is that? And then I'm such a dork, I put it back on the shelf. I can't just be distracted by everything. And then later I realized I was supposed to get that book. I found the autobiography of Marcel Vian. He was a little spiritual brother of St. Therese. He was a Vietnamese boy who lived in the 1940s, and he asked St. Therese to be his big sister, just like we might. Oh, I read Story of a Soul. I really liked it. Will you be my big sister? And he felt joy because he felt she said yes. But the next thing he knew, he actually heard her voice. Again, don't try this at home. I haven't heard Therese's voice. Occasionally, I've smelled roses. Sometimes there are roses there. Other times, it's just from heaven. But Marcel, he heard her voice. She started talking to him and instructing him, and so did Jesus and Mary. He wrote it all down. He had a spiritual director. He's now a servant of God. Different cardinals have written the introduction to his books. He's A-okay, I promise. He's the best. Jesus called him the second St. Therese, and this book, Conversations, is the answer to another of my desires, that I would have one book that I loved so much that I could just have one book. If you wanted to take away all my books, I'd be fine as long as I could have this book. He also offers himself to merciful love. And his whole book of Conversations is a kind of commentary for me personally on how to be a victim of love, and also good advice for every day. So on Palm Sunday in 1946, when he wrote this down, the Blessed Mother gave him a little bit of advice, which if I could find, I would give to you too. Let's see. Oh, you know what? She said, my dear child, if you wish to please little Jesus, accept cheerfully things which inconvenience you slightly. By that, you will be able to stop the stones that sinners today throw at Jesus. Little Jesus is your true friend. If you love him, try to protect him by your size of love. Thanks to the little sacrifices that you impose on yourself, or I would say in Corona time that are imposed on you. Thanks to these sacrifices, little Jesus loves to stand close to you, since these little sacrifices are for him like so many caresses. However, my child, continue to tell me quite simply your little problems. By that you please me, and I can only love you more. Okay, so we're going to tell the Blessed Mother our problems. We're going to offer up our little sacrifices and inconveniences. And when we can't go to communion on Holy Thursday, the night of love, which we've done our whole life and never missed a year, or when we can't go on Easter Sunday, we'll just have to laugh and say, this is a great pandemic. Most times there's a plague, people don't get to order stuff from Amazon and eat good food. We're doing okay, guys. We are little, very, very little. It's still horrible, and we want to pray like we did earlier. We want to pray, and we want to say the Divine Mercy Chaplet every day, like Father Dan asked us to. But we also want to thank Jesus for all the miracles coming out of this pandemic. And St. Therese said, if you thank God for one thing, he loves our gratitude so much that he'll give you 10 more. And then if you thank him for those 10, he'll give you 10 more for each one. Does this sound familiar? This is that exponential growth we've all been hearing about, except it's the growth of miracles and graces. So I want you guys to help me change this pandemic of fear into a pandemic of love. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to be really sad. And, you know, sometimes you might be afraid. That's okay. There's a reality out there that's scary. But God is way bigger than this, and he's going to teach you how he can live in you as in a tabernacle, and that's the grace you'll be able to take away from the pandemic. It's never going to leave you, and we'll all be better for it. So thank you for letting me talk to you. My website and blog there is SusieAndres.com. You can get my books just anywhere. I mean, they're out there for free in digital form, and you could also order them in print form if you wanted that. The print ones are going to cost you. That's why I'm excited that you can get the digital ones for free as soon as we get off. And I think I'm pretty sure they're going to change your life. So contact me later at the website if you want to. That's how I met Alice. That's how I met Paula and Mildred. And let's just do it. Let's fill the world with Jesus.